5 days, 4 minutes, our look at the week that was. Also, money in politics, big money in politics, this time from the Democratic side, from American Public Media. This is Marketplace. In Los Angeles, I'm Kai Rizdal. It is Friday today, the 20th of November. Great, as always, to have you along, everybody. We are going to start our weekly wrap, a segment, by the way, officially titled The Weekly Wrap of Wall Street and Beyond, actually on Wall Street today. To do it, we've got Catherine Rampell from The Washington Post, also John Carney. He is from The Wall Street Journal. They are in our New York studios. Hey, everybody.
Hey, Kai.
Hi, Kai.
So, John, we're going to start with you. And as I said, we're going to start on Wall Street. A couple of big tech IPOs I want to run by you. Match of Match.com and also Square of Jack Dorsey and Twitter Square. There was some speculation that those companies had sort of underperformed or gone into the IPO sort of lowballing themselves, if you will. What is, in your considered Wall Street opinion, the state of the IPO market today?
I think what we saw is actually it's pretty strong. I mean, yes, the numbers initially came in, you know, that their offering prices.
Right, their pricing's low, yeah.
Right, came in lower than people expected, but those stocks got bid up, especially Square, you know, rose really high very quickly. And, you know, so people are still excited, I guess, about love and money.
And money maybe can buy a love, but that's a whole different deal. Catherine,
absolutely.
Go ahead. Yeah. Catherine, let me ask you. Yeah, go ahead, John.
Sorry. One of the things I was going to say is that a lot of people may have had the misimpression that the company, that especially Square, had dropped in value by a lot. If you look at actually, though, how many shares they have kind of set aside, dedicated to their employees,
yeah.
It's actually a much bigger company than people thought in terms of what their actual stock market cap is.
Catherine, let me ask you the bigger picture question, which is we're on the tail end. That's going to be pejorative. This recovery has been going on for a long time, 5.5, 6-something years. Are we paying too much attention to these technology stocks and the market that's getting too long in the tooth?
Are we paying too much attention
to
them?
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, it depends on who you're talking about. There have been a lot of concerns over time that low interest rates, for example, have inflated other asset values that we've seen.
Yep.
Or low interest rates, amongst other things, may be driving up other asset values. And that's a concern. We saw a little bit of a correction earlier this year.
Yep.
I mean, if we're talking about the state of the macroeconomy, I generally don't focus so much on what's happening in the markets, particularly equity markets.
Absolutely.
I think what matters a whole lot more, both from sort of a kitchen table perspective and probably what economists pay attention to, is whether people are getting jobs. You know, what's going on with the prices of consumer goods? What's going on with the prices of production?
Right.
That much more so than equity markets.
So let us do a macroeconomic gut check here, then, Catherine. With jobs coming back, with no inflation on the table, how do you think the average person in this economy feels today?
Still not great. The economy has improved a lot over the last 6 years. We're technically at an unemployment rate of 5%, which is really, really low. But if you look at the survey data, while consumers are maybe a little bit more optimistic than they used to be, they're still not looking so, you know, they're still not looking up, basically. There was a survey that came out, I think, this week or last week that asked whether the economy was still in a recession. And like 75% of people still said yes, which surprised me.
John, what do you? Same question to you, right? What's the gut check from you?
I think people are traumatized from the financial crisis. It took a generation for people to get over the Great Depression. We hopefully won't. We didn't go into a Great Depression. Hopefully, the sort of traumatic effect that our Great Recession had on people won't last as long. But when people experience really bad economic downturns and financial crashes and see that all of their assets plummet in value, their house prices, it takes a while for that kind of fear to go away. And I think that's what's behind the idea of like people still thinking we're in a recession because they just don't feel secure because they found out in 2008 and 2009 that, you know, the economy can crash.
Well, and their wages haven't recovered either.
Well, exactly.
That's true.
Exactly. That's the big thing. And that actually took a much more negative turn than I had intended on this Friday afternoon. But, you know, the news is what the news is. John Carney from The Wall Street Journal, Catherine Rampell from The Washington Post. Thank you, guys.
Thanks, Scott.
Have a great weekend.
You too. On Wall Street today, not that it matters, as Catherine was saying. Strong start, slightly less strong finish. Details, numbers, you know the drill. One of the highest flyers in this country's fracking boom is crashing and crashing hard. Chesapeake Energy, the second biggest producer of natural gas that we have, has seen its stock crater 15% in just the past 2 days. And it's not just equity we're talking about here either. Chesapeake bondholders are getting out as well. It is, as Marketplace's Scott Tong reports from the Sustainability Desk, a story partly of industry-wide oversupply, but also partly one of too much debt.
When you're a $3.4 billion company and you owe $11 billion, and then you borrow some more, it makes people nervous. Chesapeake Energy the last few days has seen its stocks and its bonds plunge, and it's seen a surge in bets that it will default on its debt. Rob Thummel is with Tortoise Capital Advisors in Kansas City.
There's a large number of investors who are concerned about the ability for certain companies to be able to repay their debt, and they are basically trying to profit off potentially the company's inability to do that.
Most natural gas drillers are hurting from oversupply and low prices. If winter is warmer, as predicted, low demand for gas heat will hurt even more. But Chesapeake is particularly in hock. Early on in the fracking boom of the past decade, it went on a land grab, buying up drill leases with borrowed money, says Mike Briard in Dallas at Hodges Capital Management.
Several years ago, Wall Street, you know, the more acreage, the better. And why don't you borrow more money and drill more wells? And now it's, you idiot, why did you borrow all that money?
Now the company is under new management. Founder Aubrey McClendon has left, and it's trying to pay off its debt. But right now, everything it has to sell, oil, gas, land, fetches little. So it's trying to hold its assets through the winter. Analyst Jason Wangler is with Wunderlich Securities in Houston.
The bottom line is you try to survive to get through this downturn, however long it is, which of course nobody really knows, and get to the other side to where hopefully prices will recover.
Prices that are the lowest in 3.5 years. I'm Scott Tong for Marketplace.
You'd never know it to judge by the glitz and the glamour and the red carpets, but for every little gold statue handed out during the Oscars, there are all kinds of chaos. There is all kinds of chaos, I should say, that has gone on beforehand. Lobbying, marketing, maybe some arm twisting and backstabbing, and also money, money, money. And it all starts right about now. Kyle Buchanan is a senior editor at Vulture.com. He is also the co-host of a new podcast. It is called The Award Show. Kyle, thanks for coming on.
Thanks for having me.
So the Oscars are awarded, the envelope is opened, as it were, on the 28th of February, and yet so much of the action is happening now and in the next, like, 6 to 8 weeks. Run me through that, would you?
Yeah, the schedule is packed. There's an entire ecosystem of screenings, Q&As, lunches, parties, all meant to fet these actors and directors and try to sort of put them in front of Oscar voters and media members as presumptive nominees, hoping that if they, you know, tout that narrative enough, it'll actually come true.
The cynic in me will say, oh, lobbying.
Oh, yeah, it's absolutely lobbying. In fact, a lot of the time, these studios are spending more money on the actual awards campaign than they spent making the movie. And there's a lot of actors who won't even take a film, a new project, during this season because they know that they're going to be out here, you know, spending all this time shaking hands.
Wow. There is a question to be asked here about timing and release of movies and how that positions things for Oscar buzz. And I will confess that I've never really bought into it, but then again, I'm among the uninformed. Does it matter when movies get released in
Absolutely.
Terms of this? Does it really sweepstakes and all that?
It matters when and it matters how. That's why you're seeing so many movies that, you know, are contending for Oscars at the very end of the year. They want to be recent. They want to stick in Oscar voters' memories. But they also have to be very clever with how fast they release them. You know, compare something like Spotlight, which is the presumed front runner right now, the Catholic Church drama.
Right.
It's exceptional. But they haven't rushed it into thousands of theaters yet. They're trying to be very savvy and waiting until they've got those hopeful nominations in the can before they put it out. Compare that to Steve Jobs, a movie that came out to great acclaim, but
went
wide so fast.
Well, except got clobbered. I mean, come on. Nobody went to see the thing.
That's exactly what happened. They hadn't built up enough word of mouth over weeks. They put it in too many theaters too soon, and that created this box office narrative of what went wrong, which is exactly the last thing that you want out there when you're trying to create a strong Oscar story.
Let me run through a couple of other things that are going on in Hollywood now that are actually a big deal and getting some buzz. The first, and these are sort of conjoined issues, right? The first is the gender bias issue in Hollywood with films and the lack of opportunities specifically for female directors, but also the race issue. I mean, the Hollywood Reporter, their cover is five or six white women, for crying out loud.
Yeah, it's eight white women who are presumed to be in the conversation for Best Actress and Best Supporting Actress. And they've taken a lot of heat for that. And the Oscars may take even more heat come January, because this could very well be another year of 20 all-white acting nominees, as we had last year, to great controversy. It just sort of points up how little is being done in film to create an environment where performers of color can thrive. A lot of the women who've been nominated for Oscars over the last decade, Taraji P. Henson, Viola Davis, they're all working in television now because that's where the roles are. So Hollywood has to do better.
Huh. Kyle Buchanan is a senior editor at New York Magazine's Vulture.com. He is also the host of a new podcast, which is called The Award Show Show. Kyle, thanks very much.
Thank you.
Coming up,
if my job is to collect garbage in Los Angeles, and the way that I do it is collect everybody's garbage and dump it in Kai Rizdahl's backyard, I may have the lowest cost, but you may not be so happy.
No, I wouldn't. Billionaire environmentalist Tom Steyer, straight ahead. But first, let's do the numbers. Dow Industrial's up 91 points today, about a half percent, 17,823. The NASDAQ gained 31.6 tenths percent, 5104. The S&P 500 up 7 points, about a third percent, 2089 there. For the week, the Dow up 3.3%, the NASDAQ up 3.6%, the S&P 500 gained 3.2%. If you hunt, fish, camp, or otherwise knock around outdoors, a pilgrimage to Sydney, Nebraska may be in order. That is the hometown of Cabela's, the chain of enormous outdoor outfitter stores, but you'd best go soon. A hedge fund has Cabela's in its sights, and the outfitter says it would just as soon sell itself as deal with all that. Cabela's shares up 10% today. Abercrombie & Fitch puts shirts back on its male models, and the neo-preppy look seems to be working. Sales last quarter at least didn't go down. Abercrombie up 25% today. Finally, Tesla is recalling every single Model S out there. That is 90,000 of them, because one seatbelt came loose in one single car. That is taking no chances. Tesla off 0.8%. Let me just here take a minute to pimp out my interview with Elon Musk on our website, marketplace.org. You're listening to Marketplace. This is Marketplace. I'm Kai Rizdahl. We, by which I mean we, all of us, complain about Congress not getting things done until the last possible minute, and sometimes not even then. But a bill about the future of mining has passed both houses of Congress. It's waiting for the president's signature. And it's not just any mining either. It's space mining. And Marketplace's Kimberly Adams just loves space stories.
A handful of companies want to mine resources from the moon and asteroids. Ian Christensen is with the Secure World Foundation.
Oh, there are quite a number of asteroids. It's in the tens of thousands, and most of the ones that you hear folks talking about now are what are known as near-Earth asteroids.
And they're pretty valuable real estate. Some have ice, iron ore, even gold and platinum. But companies first want clarity on an important question.
Can you own the material that you extract from an asteroid?
Chris Lewicki is president of Planetary Resources, one of the companies that wants to mine asteroids. Congress passed a bill that would answer yes to that question. Lewicki says his company is ready to go.
We anticipate being able to send the first commercial mission out to a near-Earth asteroid before the end of this decade, extracting its resources like water, hydrogen, and oxygen soon after that.
But the legislation does have some ambiguity. Jim Dunstan of Mobius Legal Group is a space lawyer.
It talks about owning the rights to resources that are, quote, obtained. And it doesn't define what obtained means.
So it's not clear if a company could remotely scan an asteroid and claim its resources, or if they actually have to start digging, which Dunstan agrees is not so far in the future.
I would probably say maybe 15 years from now, someone will actually go, put the equivalent of a pick into an asteroid and dislodge a rock.
And even sooner on the moon, although it will probably be robots with pickaxes, not humans. In Washington, I'm Kimberly Adams for Marketplace.
There are going to be billions and billions of dollars spent during the 2016 presidential election cycle. Exactly how many billions depends on who you talk to, but suffice it to say it is going to be a big pile of cash. Some not small part of that money is going to come from a guy by the name of Tom Steyer. Steyer was the biggest individual donor from either party last year in the midterm elections. He founded and used to run a hedge fund in San Francisco. He is now deeply involved in the environmental movement, specifically about climate change, and even more specifically than that, against the Keystone Pipeline. Whatever Steyer and his side are doing seems to have worked. President Obama killed Keystone 2 weeks ago. So when I talked to Tom Steyer yesterday, I asked him why climate change was where he has decided to spend his time and his money.
Well, I think that my general feeling about the United States is that democracy works. And what I observed in terms of energy and climate was that it was a critical generational challenge for the United States, and that for some reason, democracy wasn't doing its normal job of kind of a lot of to-ing and fro-ing and a lot of screaming and yelling. I felt like there's something wrong here. For some reason, the system that I've always believed in wasn't working, and I was determined if that's going to be our generational challenge, I wanted to be one of the people who worked on it, tried to solve it.
There are those who will hear this interview, Mr. Steyer, and say, but wait a minute. What you decided to do was manipulate the political process with your money.
Well, I really think it's a question of what you think is important in life and what you want to do with your life. And from my point of view, I felt that our generation of Americans was challenged to solve this problem. And the question was, what was holding it up? And the actual thing that's holding it up is politics. So we've worked really hard to try and get the voice of the American people to be heard on this issue, because we think if they understand a problem and are allowed to think about it, they come up with the right answer. And if they'll, when they come up with the right answer, they can insist on their way being followed. And that's what we're for.
I noticed you didn't reject the premise of the question or, in fact, answer it, right? I mean, you were trying to manipulate the political process with your money. You're not the only one, but this is what you were trying to do.
I absolutely do reject that. We've spent the vast bulk of our money on voter-to-voter contact. So it's organization and time and people. And yeah, those things cost money, absolutely, Kai. But the fact of the matter is that is the traditional American political process. There's no question of manipulation here. What we're trying to do is have the issue be fully aired, have the solutions be discussed, and let Americans decide.
There are those who will say, and in fact, let me just state the premise instead of couching it. Tom Steyer is the left's equivalent of the Koch brothers. Discuss.
Okay, let me start drawing distinctions.
Okay.
First of all, they have a lot more money than we do.
Okay, so but what's a billion dollars between friends, right?
Second of all, what we have on our side is the facts and the truth. We recognize the implicit point that you're making, that our system, while we believe in it and trust in it, is not perfect. And part of that is the Citizens United decision and the influence of money in politics. So the way that we run our operation is completely different. We're totally transparent. We have no self-interest and we're not hiding anything. That's completely different. So it is true that we're on the other side, that our values are diametrically opposed from theirs in this instance. But the fact of the matter is that's where it ends, because the way that we operate is to try and minimize any of the problems that are associated with the imperfection of how campaigns are financed.
Are you denying that you have as much influence on the left as the Kochs have on the right?
Well, first of all, I don't see it in those terms at all.
Okay.
From our point of view, it's important that all of America move, not the left or the right. So when we see a move in America over the last 6 to 12 months in terms of how they view clean energy, it's true that Democrats are overwhelmingly in favor. It's true that independents are. But it's also that Republicans have moved 12% in the last 6 months. This is not the partisan issue in terms of the electorate, in terms of American citizens, that it's portrayed in the press. It's a highly partisan issue for elected officials and people seeking high office. But the American people are moving on this across the aisle.
So why not then let the market work? If people want clean energy, they'll buy clean energy. If people don't want dirty energy, they won't buy it. Why not let the market work instead of trying to influence the political process?
Well, there's no doubt that what we want is a level playing field for every energy source. But the key words there are level playing field. The cost of clean energy is now cheaper than fossil fuels in many instances, and it is only going to increase. So when you say let the market work, the market is working. Over two-thirds of the new electricity generation in 2015 is renewable. The issue is this. You want the market to work, but there's a question of paying for polluting. If my job is to collect garbage in Los Angeles, and the way that I do it is collect everybody's garbage and dump it in Kai Rizdal's backyard, I may have the lowest cost, but you may not be so happy.
Might not.
But that's actually what's going on. We want a fair framework so American business can solve this in the way that they solve every big problem. But politics matter. If you think the framework doesn't matter, I think that's unrealistic. And the framework right now is all behind the existing status quo businesses. And they are pushing hard as heck to try and keep their advantages.
And you're pushing back. I mean, come on, be honest, right?
I think very politely, Kai, don't you?
Well, you're a polite guy, but you're pushing back with your bank account. Right? I mean, you know.
Well, I don't think that's fair. I think what we're pushing back with is the facts about what is going on in the world, where the costs are, what's likely to happen.
But come on. For you to say we're just pushing back with the facts and then you spend $75 million in the last election cycle. Come on. I mean, out of your own pocket.
But honestly, that is a question of getting people on the ground talking to other Americans at length about what's going on. Absolutely, that's not free. Another word for politics in my mind is organization. You have to be organized. You have to let people get out there. It actually is not just magic. It is about organization, and that's not free.
I'm obliged to ask who you like in 2016. There was a piece out earlier this week noticing your absence from the role of Hillary Clinton supporters.
I mean, what we think, it is November of 2015. We have asked every candidate of both parties to give their solution to a progressive energy agenda. We're asking them to come up with a plan to explain how we're going to get 50% clean energy by 2030. And that's what we're spending all of our time on. Rather than picking a horse, we feel like the American political conversation has got to deal with this. This is the chance for the American people to hear it fleshed out. And that's really important from our point of view. And that's what we're focused on.
Seriously? You haven't picked a horse? Come on.
If we had, we'd tell you, Kai.
Here comes the put up or shut up question. Why don't you just run yourself?
We thought about what was
no,
the
no,
most...
No, wait. Not we. You. I. Okay. Come on, right?
I don't want to seem too egotistical. I spent a lot of time thinking about how we could have the most impact in 2015 and 2016. And I decided that what we're doing, the organization that we've put on the ground in several states, including my own home state of California, that is the way that we can best engage Americans on this topic so that they come and make the best decision. And that's what we're in favor of. And, that, you know, I can't think of something that's more important than doing that.
Tom Steyer, thanks very much for your time, sir.
Kai Rizdal, thank you very much.
Couple of things about that interview. First of all, you can hear the extended version online. It's at marketplace.org. We talked about 15 minutes total, Tom Steyer and I did. And also, while you're there, give a listen to me talking to Charles Koch. That one's about from a month, month and a half ago. This final note on the way out today, in which men once again proved to the world that we are idiots. A study out of Cornell University, which was looking into behavior at all-you-can-eat Italian buffets, and no, I don't know why they were looking at that, but they were. The study shows that men who ate with at least one woman ate nearly twice as much pizza as men who ate with just other men. Conclusion from the researchers? That men were trying to impress their female companions with their eating prowess. They also, those men did, by the way, they ate more salad too, so, you know, they got that going for them. All righty, we got to go. The Dow up 91 points today, about a half percent. The NASDAQ gained 31 points. That's about 0.6%. The S&P 500 added 7 points, about a third of 1% there. Our theme music was composed by BJ Lederman. Marketplace is produced by Sitar Nieves. Deborah Clark is the vice president and executive producer. I'm Kai Rizdahl. Have yourselves a good weekend, everybody. We're going to be back here on Monday. This is APM.